Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and anyone I'm missing, welcome to another edition of Clocked Out. I'm your host, Joe Malone. It's the show in two parts. First, you work a job you hate. Then you come talk to me about it. That way we can all have a little fun, even when it feels like you can't. This week, we're talking to Alex Gill, one of LA's finest, currently the production coordinator for BBDO Advertising. Though when I knew him right here at beautiful Emerson College, he was spending most of his time in the weeds. Bartending, box officing, event staffing at Boston's House of Blues. Not sure how many of you have ever seen a show at that particular venue, but I can tell you that any one of those jobs is no easy feat, to say the very least. Alex always had a lot to say about his time at House of Blues, some good, some bad, but either way, I figured he'd be the perfect guy to talk to today. But instead of taking my word for it, why don't we just get into it here on Clocked Out? To start out today, I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about how you first started working at House of Blues.
So I had just moved into my apartment, my first apartment in Boston, and I needed a job because I didn't have money to pay rent. And I had a cousin who went to Berkeley, and she worked at House of Blues, and she said it was like the best job she ever had. So I was like, why not? And they had a job fair opening. So I went in, I interviewed, and I told them about my cousin. And that's pretty much it. They hired me like a few months later because I kept bothering them that I wasn't like starting to work and I needed money to pay rent. Then I eventually started working some events and then it just kind of took off from there.
So that's a long time to not hear anything from a potential employer. Do you attribute that to because it's like a Live Nation venue and, you know, they're always dealing with so many people at any given time that like, could it just be like you got lost in the works or were they just not participating the way they should have?
I think it's more that it's just like a Live Nation venue. They're like always doing like a bunch of different events, just trying to keep themselves afloat. But the people there are really cool. They always just tried to make sure all their workers were happy. I don't know how much of that went into like the hiring process or whatever, but I'm going to blame Live Nation for that.
I mean, it's pretty easy to do that nowadays.
Yeah, definitely easier than that. I don't work there. That I can blame Live Nation for it.
Exactly. Yeah. After the fact, it's much more important. And so did you start out as event staff? Because I know you had a couple of jobs when you were working there.
Yeah. So I started out as actually a host. So I was just like seeing people at tables in the restaurant and then like the 21 plus club area. But then I did that for like maybe a year or something. And then I got moved to like being a runner. So like running all the food and stuff. And then I got moved to being a server. And then after that, I eventually moved up to bartender status, where I would like to say I made the most of my money, but that's probably not true.
But you met a lot of interesting people while you were starting out, didn't you? I remember you said something about you met Debbie Ryan. Is that right?
Debbie Ryan. I don't know if I met Debbie Ryan. She was definitely there because 21 Pilots performed a few times while I was working. She was definitely there. But I didn't get to like meet her officially. But there were definitely a lot of weird and interesting people that I wouldn't expect to be there. Some New England Patriots came by and I was talking with one of my coworkers that they like sat on a menu and we could like sell it on eBay to, you know, get some money from them. The Kid Leroy had a birthday party there one time. So I met him for like a few seconds. Kesha's been there a few times. I've met her like face to face, but I mean, I've been in pretty equal distance. There have been like a lot of interesting characters, I would say. And then you get to like regular people who are just like kind of insane. And they were just like, you know, it's a restaurant. So they didn't really like care. They just like wanted their food and they were acting all crazy because they were drunk. But it was always just fun to see if something interesting would happen whenever I was at House of Blues.
Yeah, absolutely. I can definitely see that having attended a couple of shows there myself, one of which with you, definitely.
Yeah, great so show. In,
oh, yeah. My God. Masego featuring OG. What more could you want? Literally perfect show. That being said, though, were there any shows that you worked that you remember thinking, like, if I didn't work here, I definitely would have, like, paid to see this show anyway. Like, I can't believe I'm actually here for free.
Giveon was definitely one that I really wanted to see. And I was very lucky to just, like, kind of be in the room when he was performing. I didn't go into, like, the actual show because I was working, unfortunately. And he was there for two nights, which was, like, great because they were really great nights for us. But just, like, the vibe that he gives off. And the music that he played, because I love Giveon. I was able to like sneak in for like 2 seconds before I left just to see him live, which is really all you could ask for. I wish I could have stayed for like the entire show. But
right.
I've taken what I can get at this point. It was a really great time.
So what can you tell me about bartending there? Because I know, like, as you said, you didn't start in that field. Like, I remember you saying you had to work your way up and there was a whole big process with that. Could you speak a little on that?
Yeah, so basically how it worked was you start as like a host when you like get hired on for that position, or you get like hired on as a server if you have that kind of experience, and then you kind of just like move your way up the ladder, and bartenders are kind of at the top because realistically they make the most money, they get the most tips, and people like go there for drinks mainly. My process was I just kind of like wanted to bartend because all of my friends who were working there were bartenders, and they were like, you can definitely do this, it's like easy, it's an easy enough job for you to do. But they said that I had to serve first because of the way like our OS system worked, and I was like punching in drinks and stuff, like very logistical nuanced stuff that you have to like learn before.
Yeah,
so it's I like setting up for that, a little yeah. bit. Yeah. It's like setting up the system just to make sure you're not like losing any money for the business or whatever.
Right. Yeah. You get so the foundation and then sort of graduate.
Yeah. Definitely. I was serving for, I want to say like maybe 6 months or not even. I think I was serving for maybe like 2 months. And then I like kept begging my bosses to just like make me bartend because they were like having people who were not necessarily having bartending experience just bartend because their friends were bartenders, just like a seniority kind of thing, which is like, I get it, cool, your friends are older, they know what to do. And I was like barely 21 at the time, so I didn't like know all of the logistics of drinking, but it was like, it was whatever, I could just like Google whatever and I would like work it out and be fine. But I was like consistent enough there, and I was like good at my job, like serving wise and just like being personable with customers, that they let me like bartend a few times, like kind of like nonchalantly and like slower shows, just like to get me started out. And then you have to like obviously go through a test where you have to like pour a certain amount of alcohol so you're not like over serving people, which is a legitimate problem that people like have in the restaurant business. But yeah, it was pretty, I want to say simple, but it was just like kind of a more lengthy process because a lot of people were like getting moved up quicker, even though I was there for a longer amount of time, which is kind of annoying. But they were like older, so I'm like not too pressed about it. And I got there eventually, and I like kept bartending to like the end. So.
And had those people had like previous bartending experience, the ones who got like put above you?
To my knowledge, no. They were kind of just like, they had drank before, so they understood like liqueurs and what drinks go with what kinds of fruits and things like that, things you could like learn in a book that's like super easy. But you know, I'm not like too pressed. I got to do it eventually. I made pretty good money, so it all worked out.
Hey, you folks, pardon the interruption. I just wanted to make sure that everybody had the opportunity to say hello to a stress-less holiday season with the help of HelloFresh. Skip the grocery store and save time with easy, tasty recipes delivered to your door. With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh has over 45 recipes and more than 100 seasonal add-on items to choose from every week. So it's easier than ever to find something everyone will enjoy. Go to HelloFresh.com/clansfree and use code clansfree, that's CLNSFREE, for free breakfast for life. One breakfast item per box while subscription is active. That's free breakfast for life at HelloFresh.com/clansfree with code clansfree. So we have a segment on this show that I would like to bring up right now. This is called Dine or Decline. Basically, what we're going to do here for just a minute is I'm going to go over some unreasonably priced food items, both in restaurants and just snacks. And I'm going to see if you think that it's worth the money. So you want to get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. First item we have is right here. This is the King Louis XIII pizza from a restaurant in Italy. This is worth $12,000, which I don't know if you...
$12,000?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it contains three different types of caviar, Norwegian lobster, and seven types of cheese. And I don't know if you can see this too well or not, but it doesn't look like the most appetizing thing in the world.
Yeah, no, no.
So that's a decline?
Yeah, I'll be honest. Who needs seven different types of cheese and like three different types of caviar?
It also looks like a... Yeah, exactly. It also looks like a pretty small pizza. Like that can't be more than like... Yeah, it's like 8 inches in diameter.
Yeah, I mean, Domino's is like, what, 24? No, that's so wrong. Probably like 12, but I mean, it's cheaper than that.
Absolutely. And if it's...
I'm also just like not a lobster guy, and that might be like just me. Like on a pizza, that doesn't sound too appetizing.
Yeah, but seafood and pizza is not a combo I think works well.
Yeah, so I'm gonna decline this one.
All right, well, the next one we have is from a company called Burko's Popcorn. It is $2,500 for 6.5 gallons. And this one, I feel, because at least with the caviar and things, I can understand that. This one here is a little more simplistic in that it's covered in caramel, rare Lacio salt, and 23 karat gold flakes.
23? Couldn't even like spring for 24 karat gold?
Exactly. I mean, it's like if you're gonna put gold in your food, you might as well go all out.
24. Dang. So here's my dilemma. 6.5 gallons. That's a lot of popcorn. And I'm just thinking about like Disneyland, which is like the best popcorn that I've ever had, personally. And that's like pretty expensive, but that's just because Disney sucks as like a corporation in general.
Well, of course.
And I don't know how Burko's like does with their employees or like their studios and things like that, but if it's $2,500 and it's like, I know gold's expensive, so maybe it's worth it. I might do it for $2,500 if it's 6.5 gallons. I may cave and do it.
Because at least that's not something like the pizza where you're gonna finish it in one sitting, right? I mean, 6.5 gallons, that'll last you a minute.
Yeah, it may be like a good week, maybe, if I'm not like tired of popcorn. Mm-hmm. I could do that. I can get $2,500. Is it reasonable? Probably not. Would I do it? Absolutely.
And probably not. I can definitely relate to that. So this last item we have here comes from a food truck in New York called 666 Burger. And
that's already like putting me off. I'm sorry to put me off for the 666. Why would anyone want to do that?
See, well, I'm kind of glad you asked, because this particular food item called the Douche Burger turns out has quite a story behind it. So this is the world's most expensive food truck burger. Costs, as it says here at the bottom, $666, because, right, get it. And part of the the original conception of this burger was supposed to be, the owner was like really mad about all of these uptight, kind of overpriced, eccentric burgers that you see in all these different magazines and food blogs and things. So this is sort of his take on it as sort of a sarcastic response to the whole trend. It contains a Kobe beef patty wrapped in gold leaf, foie gras, caviar, lobster, truffles, imported aged Gruyere cheese, which is melted with champagne steam, Kope Luwak barbecue sauce, and Himalayan rock salt. The owner's name is Franz Aliquo, and he said in an interview, and I'm quoting here, "It consists of a fucking burger filled and topped with rich people shit."
Yeah. No, that sounds about right. Look,
that sounds about right
too.
Mm-hmm. It also, as a little added bonus, comes with $300 bills for the wrapper.
Wait, so we're wasting money. This man is like getting $100 bills to wrap this burger that costs double the amount.
So I think in reality, it says it's a $666 burger, but I think it's closer to like $366 just because mm-hmm. that is, if you're just getting those bills back, it's like, what's the point, yeah, right?
Well, if they're greasy, well, I mm-hmm. guess you can still use them.
That's true. I think that's part of what he said is he like why he did it. He was talking about, well, kind of, you know, a rich person's plight is what do I do with all this walking around money, right? So now he's yeah. trying to give people that same experience because, you know, there's that old adage of, you know, rich people are like blowing their noses with $100 bills and things like that. So mm-hmm. I think that's sort of his play on it. But I mean, I think the appeal of this one is less so like the appetizing component of it, because I mean, you heard that list of ingredients. There's a lot going on there.
There's a lot going on.
But I mean, just for that experience, I think, well, honestly, I would like to go to this food truck just to meet this guy, because
yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking the exact, like, I would be this man's friend to definitely shit on rich people.
Definitely.
I don't know if I can curse on that. I've done it anyway.
Okay. So the last thing we're going to talk about here, part of the reason I started this show in the first place is because I understood a long time ago that anybody who has worked any type of service job more than likely has a crazy story about working that particular job. So do you have anything from working at House of Blues that you'd like to share with us?
Oh my God, where do I begin? So obviously it's a concert venue. Well, okay, I'm going to tell a story that didn't happen to me. This happened like before I worked there. My cousin was working there at the time. And it's like an insane, weird story. So, you know, it's a concert venue. And what do people do at concerts? They drink and like do drugs. And obviously, because House of Blues is like a good, tame venue, we have security where they like check you if you want to bring, if you try and bring drugs in, you're not like, you're going to get stopped. We are all people. It doesn't work every time, so obviously some stuff slips in. That's just like human nature. We all make mistakes. It's whatever. So apparently, one time my cousin was training, so she was still like, it was maybe like her third day on the job or something, and she's like walking around the venue, and she finds like a tablet of some kind of, I think it's like, it's probably acid or something like that. It's some kind of very intense drug that's not supposed to be in the vicinity. And she's like, starts seeing like kind of trails and like sprinkles everywhere around the place. And so she picks it up, grabs a manager, and the manager like does their job, like tells them like to like leave it alone. Just like they'll get somebody to like come take care of it and stuff like that, because, you know, they can't be liable for those kinds of things if something happens to their employee. And then like fast forward to maybe like 2 hours later, my cousin starts feeling a little bit like iffy, and she's like, oh well. And then she goes to like the person that's like training her, who also trained me, shout out Anna, love Anna. And she goes to Anna and she's like, I'm feeling kind of weird. And Anna's like, well, why, what happened? Do you feel like sick or something? Did you find anything on the ground? And she's like, yeah, I was walking around towards the back, and I found this like tablet on the ground. And Anna's face kind of just like drops immediately, because she like, she's like been there for a while, so she like knows the drill about what's happening. And apparently this is coming from like one of our like VIP like green rooms that I guess one of the opening acts had reserved to just like stay in and eat in like before the show and like sometime after, like during the show. And the next thing that Anna knows, the manager goes in there and the place is just like completely trashed. And there are tablets legitimately everywhere. Like it became like so much of a problem, they had to like call some people. And I don't think that they went on for like that night on the show, to be honest. I think they canceled the opening act and they just had like the big performer go on, because there were tablets like legitimately everywhere. And then my cousin had to go home and they had to like plead with her to like not sue them, because she got inherently drugged because of their opening act and just like leaving shit everywhere, which like wasn't her fault. But I feel like if I had experienced something like that, I like wouldn't know what, honestly. If I was like 19, stupid, not knowing what drugs were, I'd be like, I like think I was dying and like not know how to express myself.
I mean, it's one thing to have that on you, like, as you're going to be performing, but to be so, like, reckless with how you're storing it, and if it's just everywhere, I mean, that doesn't strike me as something that I think you just carry loose in your bag or whatever. No,
exactly. I wouldn't think so either. But I guess we don't have enough money to know exactly what that luxury is.
I mean, yeah, because that's the other thing, is it's like, how well off do you have to be to just start throwing literal sheets of LSD around the House of Blues in Boston?
Hey, I guess pretty well. Or at least you got to know somebody who's like, I got this. Don't even worry about it. I'll give you this amount, do what you want, and I'll take care.
Like, that's a good connection.
Yeah, that kind of good connection. You got to be like good to go in the world wherever.
Definitely. All right. Well, I mean, that's pretty much all I had for you today, man. Is there anything else that you'd like to cover or maybe plug before we get out of here?
Plug? I mean, shout out to the Emerson Troublemakers.
Absolutely.
Wednesday at 7 p.m.
That's right.
I don't know when this comes out, but if you haven't seen the show, go watch it next semester.
We will have recordings of it for sure. All right. Well, it was good talking to you, man. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my first podcast. No, ooh, that's so wrong. Treble is a podcast, too.
That's right. You did the first episode of the Treble Pod.
I did. Yeah, I totally forgot that I did that. But this may have been somewhat better, a lot more organized.
Well, that I thank you for. All right. Appreciate it, man.
All right, friends. There you have it. Our interview with Alex Gill. It was good to talk to him. I hadn't seen or heard from him in quite some time, so I figured this podcast would be a perfect opportunity for us to catch up, and I'm glad everybody here was able to hear that firsthand. My thanks again to our sponsor today, HelloFresh. Thank you all so much for listening, and until next time, I'm Joe Malone with Clocked Out.